The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Meditation doesn't have to be a solo practice. Meditation is more fun with friends. Looking for a way to drop in and hang out at the same time? Join us online at Omega Institute for a meditation party with self-proclaimed meditation nerds Dan Harris, host of the 10% Happier podcast, Sabine Selassie, and Jeff Warren. This three-day retreat will stream live from Omega's Hudson Valley campus May 17th to 19th. Don't miss the party. Reserve your spot at eomega.org/party today.
Welcome to Spirit of Recovery, offering support for your spiritual growth and addiction recovery. Here's Reverend Dan Beckett.
Welcome to the Spirit of Recovery podcast. We're glad you're with us today. I'm Reverend Dan Beckett, here with co-host Reverend Michelle Vargas. Together, we share ways that spirituality and addiction recovery intertwine and work together to support your spiritual growth in your own recovery journey. We're basically a couple of recovery nerds and ordained Unity ministers sharing our experience, strength, and hope on the spiritual journey of addiction recovery. We hope that something you hear today will be helpful to you on your own recovery journey.
We invite your questions, comments, wisdom, and feedback anytime. Just send an email to spiritofrecoveryunity@gmail.com. And Facebook users, you can message us from our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery. Just click the send message button right below the banner. And please help us carry the message by following and subscribing to Spirit of Recovery on your favorite podcast platform.
Today's episode is titled Staying in Balance. The fifth tradition tells us that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. When we first get into recovery, we learn we need to focus on ourselves in order to heal and grow. But we quickly find that being of service to others is an essential part of our own healing. Today, we want to share our experience, strength, and hope on balancing self and other in a healthy way as an ongoing part of a successful recovery journey.
Wow, this is such a great topic. Balancing self and other. I love that. So it's not a secret that we tend to be a little bit of a self-centered bunch. I know I am very self. Okay. So what does self-centered mean, right? Sometimes we think that self-centered means that we think highly of ourselves, but I think that actually it can be the opposite. It can be that we don't think very highly of ourselves and we have a lot of shame issues and self-esteem issues and such. And so it requires a lot of focus on self just to function. We were talking about this a little bit before the show that it's like, I don't focus on myself because I want to. I focus on myself because it requires a lot of focus just to keep this thing going, you know, to keep myself sort of upright and functioning. And so one of the ways that I've heard this described, and this sounds horrible, but this combination of self-centeredness, but also low self-esteem, is that so many of us feel like we are the piece of garbage that the world revolves around.
Yeah.
The first time I heard that in a meeting, I was like, that's me. And it's not that I would say like, oh yeah, I'm a piece of garbage. You know, I would never say that consciously, but there's those internalized negative self-beliefs, right? And yet at the same time, you know, feeling like, I don't know how to describe it. Like I say, it's a self-centeredness that I think is a coping mechanism, you know, that gets developed at a really young age. I think for me, it did, focusing on myself for survival, really just to try to keep it all together. I think that if you're highly functioning and you're, you know, emotionally and psychologically stable, then you're freed up to sort of focus on other things. But when you're just trying to manage yourself on a daily basis and get through things, then it can end up looking like you really don't care about anybody else. So this is a journey. This is a real journey. the more that I become emotionally healthy, the more of that time and energy is freed up to then be in service to others.
Yeah, I have similar experiences. And I guess the, you know, if I were to try and say how did I get this way, what you described, I think, is a pretty reasonable solution or theory to that we at a young age, for whatever reason, get the idea that things are not safe.
Yes.
And so we have to focus only on ourselves in order to be safe, and then once that habit takes hold, it kind of stays there. You start to say, does that mean that we think very highly of ourselves, but then sometimes we think very lowly of ourselves? What I think is, we think mostly of ourselves, whether it's seemingly positive or negative. It's still,
that's funny.
What's that? The Holy Trinity, me, myself, and I, right?
Yeah.
When we get started. But I'm reminded of that phrase from recovery literature that talks about 100 forms of fear, self-centeredness driven by 100 forms of fear.
Yes.
And I found that really helpful when I first encountered that idea early in recovery. I found it super helpful. It's like, so what that told me was that there's a way forward. There's a solution here. I'm not stuck in this box forever. If I'm like this because I have fears, then I can look at those fears and heal those things over time. Once I can kind of see them and name them, that's most recently how I've come to think of it. I can heal something, or something within me can be healed, but only if I can see it and name it.
Yeah.
And then talk about it too. That's actually a critical piece of it all for me. So yeah, self-centeredness driven by 100 forms of fear, of not, not feeling safe, of not having enough, of not having the ability to do this or that, kind of, being incapable or helpless or powerless or whatever. We are fragile beings, that's for sure. Our bodies are quite fragile. All you have to do is like fall 20 feet and you could die easily.
I prefer to not think about how fragile we are sometimes.
We're pretty fragile. Even we're hurtling down the highway in these metal boxes at a breakneck speed. Like, if you hit something, our body, not strong.
No. It's like, and yet in other ways, we're so strong and resilient,
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
both.
True. Yep.
Yeah, that helped me clarify what I was trying to say when you said about the being driven by 100 forms of fear, because I guess that's what I was trying to say, is it's a self-centeredness based on fear and insecurity rather than a self-centeredness based on arrogance. Not to say that we don't have arrogance as well, but I think that's a different process.
I think fear underlies all of it. Yeah.
I know that's one thing I think I remember really learning in recovery, is that fear is really the basis of all our problems. And everyone has fear. It's just we have particular types of fears that cause certain types of behaviors. But that fear is really like, if you peel away the layers of all the other stuff, it always comes down to a common denominator of fear. That's sort of underlies a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that's an awareness. That's something that we can learn, right? Because if we don't know that, then we think we're acting out of something else. But when we start doing the work of recovery, which is really a process of self-awareness and getting to know ourselves and understand what drives us and what causes us to do certain things, then we start to see that, I'm really actually acting out of fear. Like you said, if we can name it and we can see what it is, okay, now I can start to look at, why am I so afraid? But if I don't take the time to peel those layers away and see that fear is really what's underneath it, then I'm sort of just stuck, working on the surface of things, which is not where the real issue is. So that's part of, we're talking today about wisdom, and I'm going to go ahead a working definition of wisdom is to be able to discern, evaluate, and apply what you know. So for me, the key word here is discern. In recovery, we learn to build our powers of discernment. You know, when we're drinking and using or active in our addiction, there's not a lot of discerning or discernment going on. There's a lot of sort of just trying to manage our behavior, right? Trying to do our addiction and have it cause the least amount of problems for us.
Yeah, it's like crisis management mode.
Yeah, yeah. And we're in that all the time. So there's no energy left for discerning. There's not a lot of clear thinking. So that power of wisdom, that ability to discern, to begin to see what's really going on here, you know, really, to me, that's kind of the whole deal of what recovery is about, is getting that self-awareness on board, starting to see, okay, this is fear that I'm acting out of, you know, and what am I afraid of and why am I so afraid? And, you know, that's a lot more effective to work on the root cause of things than to be working on the surface of the symptoms of things. So I think that discernment is so important, and it comes, you know, first of all, from sobriety. We've got to be sober from whatever the active addiction is first, so Absolutely. That we can begin to have clear thinking. And like I say, have the freed up time and energy to even be able to begin to discern and to, to begin to see what's really going on and to begin to understand ourselves.
Yeah, nothing changes until, you know, if the addiction is alcohol, which is my experience, nothing changes until we, as we say, put the plug in the jug. You have to do that. I had to do that first. Yeah. Yeah. Only then that creates an opportunity for other things to happen. No guarantees, because I still have to show up and do the work and learn the tools and be willing and et cetera, et cetera, you know, honest and open-minded and willing. You know, when we talked about wisdom, that phrase from the Serenity Prayer jumps to mind, the wisdom to know the difference. Mm. You know, the difference between that which I have no control over, which I would like to just be able to let go of, and that which I do have control over, and in which case I would like the courage to take action.
Yeah.
If I choose to. I mean, I guess I could look at something and say, I could take action, but I don't want to. That's fine. As long as I'm making a conscious decision, mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable. But where I know I and many of us beat our head against the wall is the things that we have no control over, kind of railing against those, also known as often as complaining. Right. And complaining about the weather is like the textbook example of futility,
which I was just doing 5 minutes ago.
Complaining about the weather. We literally have no power over the weather. I only have power over my response to the weather. So if it's raining, what I want to do is bring an umbrella and everything's cool. I lived in Michigan for many years. It gets very, very cold in the winter in Michigan, which is only a problem if I'm not dressed for it. If I'm dressed for it, it's actually no problem at all. I'm perfectly warm all the time. But you have to respond to the weather and not, you know, expect the weather to respond to you. I had a girlfriend years and years ago who, would wear shorts when she wanted it to be warm, not when it was warm. Yeah, good luck with that. I don't think that's going to change the weather, but the wisdom to know the difference. Yes, and we're talking about the spiritual power of wisdom, so let's mention the Unity's 12 powers framework, of which wisdom is one of them. And as we always say, these are spiritual abilities that we all have, that we're all using all the time. Our task is to become aware of how we're using them so that we can have the power to choose how to use them. We want to be using our wisdom and our other abilities in skillful ways, not in unskillful ways. So if I'm using wisdom in a skillful way, I am able to evaluate and discern and choose and apply what I know. And that's essential along the way in a recovery journey. And the good news is, the longer, you know, as I keep putting one foot in front of the other on this path, my ability to use wisdom in a skillful manner increases over time. Mm-hmm. It just does. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to fix it. I just have to show up and use it. It's sort of like a muscle, I guess, and mm-hmm. learn from others around me. You know, the deal, the usual stuff. It works.
Yeah. Yeah. So like you said, getting clean or sober, whatever it is from the act of addiction is the very first step. None of this can be done while that act of addiction is still in place, because that's what clouds our ability to discern in the first place. So that's the very beginning. But then how do we, so where does this wisdom come from? I think it's important, you know, because the recovery is a spiritual program. It's not about us figuring everything out. It's not about, you know, us suddenly knowing how to do everything, because that's not going to happen. I mean, it's about developing, you know, contact with the God of our own understanding and realizing that that God is the source of all wisdom. Divine mind is the source of all wisdom. And we have a direct portal to that. So we have to learn to tap into that. So, you know, it's sort of, it depends on whether we're talking about ourself with a small s self or our capital S higher self, right? So my small s self does not have the wisdom of the universe in it. It does not. My higher self has access to that source, which is all wisdom. So the more that I develop that connection to God, that connection to source, the more I can begin to access that wisdom. So how do I do that? So time spent communing with God, however that looks for me, prayer, meditation, time spent in the quiet, doesn't even have to be, you know, by myself. It can be in prayer groups, or it can be in a 12-step meeting or in a church service or whatever it is, but beginning to develop my ability to tap into that wisdom of God. And that's where I get it from. That's where the ability to discern comes from. So just, you know, trying to clarify that it's not, I want to say it's not that it's in me, but it is in me, but it's not in small me. It's in my higher self. It's hard to, sometimes a little confusing to explain, but because that's the gist of recovery, right? Is realizing that I in and of myself can do nothing, but I, you know, when connected to source, can do everything.
All things, right?
Yeah.
All with God, all things are possible. Right. I want to share from the book of James, being a Bible nerd, and as we sometimes acknowledge that we are Team Jesus here.
Yes.
From the book of James, chapter 1, verse 5 says, if any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given you. Doesn't say it might be given you, it will be given you. And I love those particular adjectives, those that are describing God's giving generously and ungrudgingly. Ungrudgingly means to me no strings attached.
This is
not a wisdom plus a dose of guilt to go along with it. You know,
it's
ungrudging, no strings attached. I've heard it said that a gift with strings attached is not a gift, it's a bribe. Yeah. Right? Yeah. God does not bribe us. Mm-mm. God gives generously with no strings attached. It's the same as the concept of grace. And it is available to us. And I love it that we see it in this ancient spiritual literature here, the book of James. How cool is that? It was true then. It was true before then. It's true now.
Yeah.
And it's exactly as you're saying. I see it the same way. You know, that's kind of our unity way of seeing the divine, is that the divine is present everywhere, always, including within ourselves. And so as we turn within in prayer, we can commune with it. And my small lowercase m mind can become more open to the divine mind that is present. And it basically acts as an instructor, teacher, guide, healer, all of the above.
Right.
For us. So I love that about it. We have access to all the wisdom that we could ever need.
Yes.
I know that I just had to learn how to stop blocking it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it becomes about our ability to access it. Like you said, this all the wisdom of the universe is available to us. It's our ability to start accessing it. And when we do start to, so what is that? So let's talk in really practical terms. For me, this looked like, you know, before I would make a decision, I would pray about it. I would ask for guidance. I would affirm that, you know, that God's wisdom in me was going to guide me to the best and perfect choice, the best and perfect decision, my highest good, et cetera. So I would start to do that before I made decisions, you know, and, you know, the unity method of prayer is, well, there's a lot of various pieces to it, but, in addition to the verbal part of affirming, we also spend time in the silence, whether that's 30 seconds or 20 minutes, we begin to cultivate that into our daily lives, having some time in the quiet, because the quiet is where we can access that which is not of my human ego mind, right? The human ego mind is so loud and so noisy because it's trying very hard to take care of us and preserve us all the time. So it takes an awful lot for me to be able to even hear anything beyond my own ego mind, you know? Yeah. So I have to cultivate that. I have to spend time doing that each and every day so that that place becomes more accessible to me. And the great thing is you said something about a muscle. It is like a muscle also, that the more we practice it and the more we work at it, the stronger our ability to access that place gets. So then it becomes easier and easier, and we can access deeper and deeper levels of it. When we start to develop that ability and we find that we are knowing what to do without knowing how we knew, that kind of thing, we call that intuition. But intuition is really tapping into the divine within.
Yeah.
So we begin to see that our human ego mind may not know the answer, but the higher self within, the divine within, does know the answer. And we cultivate our ability to know from that place and to discern from that place and to make decisions from that place. You know, I don't know. All I know is when I started living that way, things got a heck of a lot better very quickly. That's basically the nitty gritty of it. You know, I used to just think that I had to figure everything out myself. And that was pretty hard. You know, that's pretty stressful. When I started turning each and everything in my life over to the God of my understanding and seeking the wisdom of that power in every decision I made in my life totally turned around. And I think you probably had a similar experience.
I did. And, you know, as you share that, I'm reminded of this wonderful quote from Unity Minister and Prosperity Teacher Catherine Ponder, because I'm thinking about this question that you and I asked each other: how did wisdom help me move from self-centeredness to a balanced life? Mm-hmm. And Catherine Ponder, and this is in the form of an affirmation, she says, "There is a divine solution to this situation. The divine solution is the sublime solution. I give thanks that the divine solution quickly appears now."
So that
acknowledging exactly what you were saying, that the wisdom is present, and I'm just going to take a breath and affirm something like exactly like that or along those lines, which helps me know that, okay, maybe what I need to do is kind of get out of the way.
Yeah.
Meaning I need to just take a breath and allow this path forward to become clear to me rather than trying to figure it out.
Yes.
I'm exactly like you. I had to do everything myself before I learned this spiritual set of tools that is now at the very center of my everything about my life. And that question, how did wisdom help me move from self-centeredness to a balanced life? Most broadly for me, the answer is by giving me something other than fear to live from.
Yeah,
and that is the spirit, the God presence, the Christ consciousness that is within us all, that always has been within us all. And the way I look at it, I think the way we look at it is it's a program of discovery of that.
Mm-hmm.
And letting that come forward and, in a sense, ceasing to block it, even though I never would have thought or said I was blocking anything. Didn't make any sense at all. Right. Only now can I look back and see, okay, I was kind of, like you said, my mind is so fearful that it's so filled up with me that I can't hear anything else.
Exactly.
And then it takes practice. It takes practice to hear something other than my own my own mind chatter that I was totally convinced was the only way I was going to survive. I like this way better. I like this way better.
Yeah. And, you know, both of us, we've been doing this for a minute, as the young people say. We've been doing this for a while now, and we still have to work at it, right? Like, I have to really work at this. My ego is perfectly ready and willing to jump in and take over anytime I am less than vigilant, you know, which is a lot of the time, because I'm busy making dinner for my kid and doing the laundry and trying to take care of everything. And the ego's like, oh, she's not paying attention. Let's get back in there. Let's take over again, you know? So this is something we have to work at every day for the rest of our lives, you know, really. I mean, it's not like I'm going to become the Dalai Lama. It's just not going to happen.
Right. And I'm driving down the highway trying to teach everyone how to drive properly through my program that I like to call resentment and self-righteous indignation. Come on, people. And that's my ego taking over. In our show for what we call recovery in a nutshell. This is when we try to summarize the various pieces of all that we've just shared, the ones that we found most helpful on our recovery journey. So, Reverend Michelle, in a nutshell, if someone came to you and said, how can I balance doing my inner work with being of service to others at the same time? Those seem like opposite things. How can I do that?
Yeah. So I hate to sound like a broken record, but it all comes down to my connection with the higher power. You know, we have the Bible verse, seek ye first the kingdom, right? Yeah, so yeah. I have to seek God first in everything. So I have to see that my relationship with God is right, meaning that I'm in touch on a daily basis, that I'm spending at least a few minutes every day in prayer and meditation, that I'm seeking God's guidance in all things. And when I start to live that way, things get easier. And then the energy that it takes just to get through the day, some of that is freed up, and I can use that energy to begin to be of service to others. Even if it's just showing up at a meeting and saying, look, this is what I'm doing and this is what's working in my life, that's being in service to others. That helps others. So as we develop this relationship with the higher power and we learn to seek that wisdom in all things, I think balance begins to come naturally into life.
Yeah, well, my thoughts about it were just first to relax and breathe, because as I ask myself that question, I can feel sort of the tension and fear in it. And so step one, just take a deep breath and know that there's a way forward and all is well. And we're on a path of discovery. And one day at a time, that saying comes to mind. Don't try to do everything all at once. You don't need to. Just breathe, inhale and exhale. It's a simple cycle, inhale and exhale. And then I recognize that, well, that's how I balance things. I do inner work, kind of like the inhale part. I'll do my inner work and then alternate with exhale, step out in service in the world, even if it's just a little thing, like you said, right. Going to a meeting, making the coffee is always the great example of an act of service. I don't have to save the world, you know, I don't have to become the Dalai Lama and then become Mother Teresa. You know, that's not what this is about. Just one day at a time, one breath at a time, it's all going to be fine. Just keep showing up, suit up and show up and do the work. Or as I like to say, it's contained in the timeless wisdom of the shampoo bottle, right? I do my inner work. I step up in service, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat.
Yes.
Words to live by.
Sounds like a good plan. Well, as always, we have an affirmation for you. And today our affirmation is this: I am divinely inspired and guided in all my ways.
Once again, I'm divinely inspired and guided in all my ways. That's that inner wisdom that we're talking about. Well, it's happened again. You've given yourself the gift of another episode of Spirit of Recovery, and we're grateful. We hope you think of it that way. If you don't tell us. We hope you found something in all of our driveling today that you find genuinely helpful. I don't know if you were driveling. I was definitely driveling. And we bless you wherever you are on your recovery journey.
I'm always driveling. As always, we invite your questions, comments, wisdom, and feedback anytime. You can find us on our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery, or you can email us at spiritofrecoveryunity@gmail.com. And please help us carry the message to others by following and subscribing to Spirit of Recovery on your favorite podcast platform. We're so glad that you joined us today, and we hope you'll join us again. Until then, don't drink like my co-host.
And please don't drink like my co-host. It did not work. It was not pretty. I could say the same about myself.
Instead, have yourself a wonder-filled week.
If you're inspired by the teachings of Dr. Wayne Dyer, you will love the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast with Nadia De La Cruz.
You are a spiritual being having a human experience. My name is Nadia De La Cruz, and I started the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast to explore spiritual topics like manifestation and meditation with guests who share their own stories of insight, awakening, and transformation. Listen now on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.